Hey, this is Jack Baer, sports editor at the Daily Cardinal, here with Jim, my co-editor. And you know what? We were gonna lead with some March Madness talk, but then Chris Borland drops the bombshell, retiring due to head injury concerns. And we just gotta talk about this. This is something huge on the national landscape for football. So, Jim, what were your initial thoughts? Like, what ran through your mind when like you first saw that?
I typed back to you in all caps. So if you know, you can sum up that a little bit.
All but caps have a sacred, like, level here.
You don't use all caps, you know, for much.
Yeah, you know what? You use all caps when Chris Borland retires, maybe Frank Kaminsky wins the Win Award, when Wisconsin ties it against Michigan State. Yeah, all caps.
It all was caps. Big. You limit your all caps. Anyways, no, this is huge, especially because Borland has only, according to him, Borland only has two diagnosed concussions.
Both before college.
Now that's diagnosed, so you know you can argue he probably maybe had another concussion, you know, throughout his career, or you know just I'm hearing a lot about the subconcussive blows. So, you know, the amount of impact that like you take on, but it doesn't necessarily mean a concussion, but just like all that repeated, yeah. You know, and that just builds up.
Yeah, and the nature of Borland as a player kind of like both explains this and makes it kind of more unbelievable to believe, because Chris Borland was just one of those guys that you saw him on the field, you knew he loved football, you knew he was trying his hardest, because, you know, the dude, like, but he's also a smart guy. So you see this, you know, high effort, high IQ player, you typically think those guys, you know, they're never walking away from football, they always love it. But, I mean, I remember Borland retweeted Neil deGrasse Tyson once that a football player, 250-pounder, running 50 miles an hour, has the force of an AK-47 bullet. And when you're Chris Borland, you have to move even faster, you take even more shots. And that just kind of makes sense. He just saw his position in football, and he knew, hey, when I'm going to be age 50, there's a very good chance I'm not going to like the body I have. And it's just a decision that he's made. And I haven't seen a single person disagree with it, which is actually kind of it. That should scare the crap out of the NFL.
Besides, you know, your internet idiots. But, yeah, yeah. I mean they're...
And pro football talk.
Yeah, there's another one. but, no, I it's pretty much, you know, from the people with opinions worth taking seriously, it's pretty much been a universally respected decision. It's proactive. I mean, he's not doing this just to, you know, because he's had so many injuries. He has been, you know, banged up in college
But what makes this unprecedented is it's not he's retiring due to injury concerns. He's retiring due to because he doesn't want to even have injury concerns.
Right.
Like, this is totally preemptive.
Right. And it just... I mean, the NFL has so many things that are, you know, looking bad for them right now. Is the NFL healthy? Yes. And the industry is still booming. Yeah, the attention is still there, but...
But this is sort of like a boxing in the 60s deal where, yeah, you know what? The 20 years are probably going to be fine, but the way they're setting up, the 20 years after those 20 years, it's going to be a pretty big decline. And the 20 years after those 40 years, maybe it's a different sport. You know, we just don't know.
And we don't know. And people will always play football. And there will always still be a demand for a professional game, I feel. I mean, it's just be just kind of strange for, you know, for this to lead into a complete disappearance. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, no, this could definitely dilute the talent pool.
And just, you know, this is another, like, black mark on the NFL, and they have had so many of those recently that, you know, you can hate Roger Goodell all you want, and I do. And can I speak for you in saying that you do?
Yeah.
Okay. You can hate Roger Goodell all you want, but he's not in an enviable position at all.
Yeah, but he's also getting paid $1 million a year to be in that position.
That's true. And, you know, he's got the unanimous support from, you know, the 31 private owners of the NFL. So
Peter King and Pro Football Talk.
God. All the NFL conglomerate media.
Yeah. All right, but yeah, that's boring. No, it was a shock, but it was such an understandable shock, and that is bad for the NFL.
It's just in larger terms, it's a developing story, and you know, it's not just Borland. It's, you know, Patrick Willis and Jason Worlds.
Well, hey, Patrick Willis doesn't get injured. He found God, which
what that was?
Yeah, no, it was a religious awakening.
Really?
Yeah,
I did not hear about that.
Yeah, no, it's a heck of a thing. God, the Niners are so cursed. It's actually kind of hilarious.
Yeah, remember when they almost won the Super Bowl?
Remember when they had the best linebacking core in the NFL 2 weeks ago? But yeah, okay, moving on. We got a guest on here today, as we are wont to do. Women's hockey is making some noise, you know, both last week and this week. So we have Bobby Ehrlich on to talk about this Frozen Four team. So, Bobby, what were your impressions of last week's just crushing of Boston University?
Yeah, I was really surprised actually by the game, because I figured it would be close. Boston has some serious firepower. They have arguably the best player in the nation in Marie-Philippe Poulin, and so Wisconsin to come out there and just absolutely annihilate them was pretty impressive. Pankowski, 2 goals, really spread the offense out, and just total offensive domination for Wisconsin.
Now the matchup this Friday is with Minnesota, and Gophers have had the Badgers' number so far this year.
What? Just this year?
Yeah, that's true. They've had the Badgers' number for a while. What about this year's team? What about this Badgers team? How can they ignore those losses and finally make it over the top and beat Minnesota?
Well, I think about 2 weeks ago I would have said that they couldn't, but now you can almost sense the confidence that they have, and you can sense it on the ice, you can sense it when they interview them after the game. All they're pretty much talking about is how calm they are, how collected they are, how much confidence they have going up into Minnesota. And one answer that really stood out to me in the press conference last week was Annie Pankowski said something like, look, when we went up there last time, we were nervous, simple as that. But this time, we know how good we are. And basically said, we're going to beat them. We're going to go up there and give them all we got, and we can beat them, and we know it. And so, yeah, I think that's how they feel. Yeah.
So do you think that you said your view has changed in the past, like, 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's more so, you know, like you said, the confidence thing, or do you think that Minnesota has some legitimate weaknesses that the Badgers can exploit?
I don't think Minnesota has any weaknesses. I think it's going to be just an all-around, all-out battle between two really good teams. But I think that Wisconsin can outplay them. I think top to bottom, from their top to bottom lines, they have goal scorers on each line. If they can get production throughout all four of those lines, they can beat Minnesota.
Yeah, and it also helps that Minnesota, like, okay, let's be clear. Minnesota is an elite women's hockey team this year. But, like, the 2 years before this season, they were a roving death machine, like, they were unstoppable. So, like, yeah, Minnesota is probably good, but they aren't probably as good as they have been in the past, and that could help Wisconsin turn the tide, right?
Right, I agree with you. And they just lost to they lost in the WCHA playoffs, I believe, to whoever Wisconsin played in the championship, which was I can't think of it right now.
Oh, this is bad. was that Ohio State?
No, not in the WCHA. Oh, no.
That's even worse.
Bemidji.
Oh, it's Bemidji.
Yes, but yeah. Bemidji did not have a very good regular season.
I apologize to our viewers.
So,
we deserve better.
Minnesota.
Maybe our multimeter Ian will edit it out, but you know what? I don't think he likes us that much, so.
Can't make any promises.
Minnesota is beatable, though, that's for sure. I mean, they're not like a team that is going to go undefeated. They're not Kentucky, who's gone 34-0. I mean, they can be beaten. They've lost this season, and Wisconsin played them to a draw one time this year, so they're beatable. They're not unstoppable.
All right, and what do you think of the teams on the other side of the bracket?
On the other side, you got Harvard and Boston College. I would say Boston College is probably the best team in the nation. They've didn't lose a game in conference. They went 21-0.
That sounds good.
They've lost 2 games all season. They're averaging some ridiculous amount of goals, like 3.4 goals a game. So they're loaded. Harvard, I think, will give them a game. But I believe Boston can come out, and I believe Boston College is the team to beat. Not Boston. Boston College is the team to beat.
Yeah, Boston University was very beaten.
So, yeah, I believe Boston College is the team to beat. But whoever comes out of that Wisconsin-Minnesota game is going to be hot. They're going to come off, obviously, a huge win, riding an emotional high. So whoever comes out of that game is going to be tough to beat in the final.
All right, all right. Our apologies again for those 3 simultaneous brain farts. But, yeah. Moving on, you might have heard about this, you know. Like, maybe it's a new thing, but there is a basketball tournament happening in the next few weeks. I think the kids are calling it March Madness, but
it was crazy, kids.
Oh yeah. But anyway, so we're gonna talk about the top 2 seeds for every region. We're also gonna bring on Bobby because he worked on the March Madness issue for us, which we'll talk about later. We really like it. So anyway, we're gonna just dive into here. We're gonna start with the Midwest region and then work clockwise around, ending in Wisconsin's region. So right now we got the Midwest and Kentucky, who is not bad at basketball.
Yeah, Yeah, that's all there needs to be said. They're 34-0. I mean, if there's only a very few number of teams that can take them down. I mean, yeah.
I mean they have two of the top four centers in the nation with Carl Towns and Willie Cauley-Stein. Actually, Carl Anthony Towns. So just if you're a three name center from Kentucky, get ready for the NBA, bud. But yeah, so Kentucky, best team in the nation. No one is going to question that and be right. So but they're also like they fascinate me with my team with their team structure, because they have they roll out two true centers with every lineup, and then they also have some guards, the Harrison twins, Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis. Like you'll see two or three of those guys on the floor each time, and the guards are just like so interesting, because the Harrison twins, I do not like how they play. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. Yeah. I just wanted you to, reiterate
that. All right, Kentucky uses them a lot when they're on the floor. I think they're the top two in usage percentage on the team. And Aaron Harrison, he's shooting, 31% from three-point range. And Andrew Harrison, he can pass, but he's also responsible for a lot of turnovers. Neither of them are really good scorers, or at least not as good as Booker and Ulis, who Booker's the best shooter in the SEC, probably top five in the country. But just amazing, you have this team so talented, and the two players they use the most according to usage percentage are probably the worst in their top nine.
Yeah, Kentucky's going to waltz into the Final Four.
Oh, yeah. Part of the reason is when you look at their two seed, Kansas. And okay, Kansas, they've been improving all year. But they could not have been screwed harder with this draw. Because in case you didn't remember, Kentucky and Kansas played first or second game of the year. And
played.
Yeah, Kansas lost by 32. It was worse than the score suggested. They had as many field goals as Kentucky had blocks. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Kentucky or Kansas... and plus, they got a really strong three seed in Notre Dame, maybe the strongest of all the three seeds.
I don't think they're gonna get past the Wichita State matchup. Oh yeah. Indiana's so streaky, and you never know what you're gonna get with them. But I think Wichita State's gonna handle that game.
And Wichita State's gonna go into a Kansas matchup with a vengeance.
Oh, because if anybody hasn't heard about this, Kansas absolutely refuses to schedule Wichita State. Yeah. And so there's actual legislation, at least there was last year, there was legislation in the Kansas State Assembly to force them to play each other. Yeah.
So I don't know what Bill Self did to piss off the selection committee, but they're going to be playing the in-state rival that they refuse to play and will look like just screw-ups if they lose to them. They play Notre Dame, who's arguably the strongest three seed in the entire bracket, and then they have Kentucky. So Kansas, they're screwed. But, because we're saying this will make the Final Four somehow, but they're screwed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's move on to the East region.
Wait, we didn't bring him on.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he was our South regional expert, I believe. So, you can't blame me totally. But, Bobby, your thoughts?
I do disagree with you guys a little bit. I think Kentucky is beatable. I think Notre Dame could beat them. Notre Dame shoots the ball well. If they face up with them in the Elite Eight, I could see him beating them. And you guys are going to call me crazy, but I think Maryland has a chance.
Ooh,
I think Maryland
bud.
Has a chance. They played very well against Wisconsin. They have two guys who can score very well. That's true. I think if they can play a fundamental basketball game, they can at least keep it close. It will at least be close.
I think Maryland has an outside chance, but away from that home court advantage, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, and Maryland was also, I think, one of the luckiest teams of the year in KenPom. But, yeah, I mean, Kentucky, it's not like they got a four-round bye. They have speed bumps, but, frankly, they're a monster truck right now. So maybe the speed bumps can screw them up if the driver's, inebriated or something. But other than that, yeah.
So is Calipari coming to the game drunk or what?
I mean, honestly, that's how I think they lose. But, yeah. So, yeah, Midwest region, there's some interesting teams here, but Kentucky makes things this sadly uninteresting. All right, now to the East region over for real. We have Villanova and Virginia as the top two seeds. However, I feel like if we went up to someone a week ago and said Virginia and Villanova are the top two seeds in a region, no one could tell us who the one seed is there.
People would have said Virginia. Yeah. I don't know. Villanova, they're in a weak conference. The Big East was not very good.
Yeah, I mean,
and they're, I just... there are a lot of Big East teams that got high seedings, and I'm kind of like, how? Xavier as a 6? There's somebody else, too, from the Big East that was – oh, Providence is a 6, too. It's like, why? I don't know.
Well, apparently, I think the Sagarin Reigns have them as a top 3 conference, actually. I don't know how.
Really?
I do not make those ratings. But they were really strong in the early going. Oh, and there's Butler, too.
I was going to say Butler. Butler's another 6. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, Big East is the conference of the 60s, I guess. But, yeah. You know, I think I'd like Nova more than most and Virginia less than most just because everyone's buying Virginia, everyone's selling Villanova, and I don't think it's
I feel like a lot of people are selling both of these teams, honestly. People are loving Michigan State.
Oh, Michigan State over Virginia is very in vogue right now, but
it's very in vogue. But I don't see it happen. It's same with NC State over Villanova. Yeah. But I don't see that happening either. Yeah. I think it's going to be a Nova Virginia Elite Eight matchup in this region. But
well, I mean, that's barring like any, you know, shocks, which, you know, never happened in March. So
no,
yeah,
no, it's all 4-1 seeds make it every single year.
All right, Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Well, Joe, I'm gonna disagree with you again. I think I know Michigan State is kind of a trendy pick right now, but I think they're trendy for a reason, and that's because of one guy, and that's Tom Izzo, who is just unbelievable in the month of March. And I tell you what, they looked unbelievable against Wisconsin. Valentin can really shoot the ball. I mean, he can really knock down the ball.
He can do everything.
He really can.
He's like Frank Kaminsky if Kaminsky were like 6 inches shorter.
And they got Dawson, who has been consistently good over the past couple of years, and they got Trice, who is a solid point guard. Solid
leadership. Like the reason that I was at Sunday's game. The reason that Michigan State was competitive as opposed to the last time they played, it was Brandon Dawson. Mm-hmm. Dawson killed it last weekend. He was so good.
So I think between those three, I think they have a good shot being Virginia. And then if they get hot, who knows? I think like you were talking about, I think Villanova is kind of a week one seed. And I think Michigan State could really knock off an upset and march their way into Indianapolis.
All right. So do you have Villanova in your Elite Eight?
Yes, I think Villanova will be fine. I don't think NC State is that good of a team. I think LSU will give them a run for their money. Yeah. So
people are loving NC State for stuff that happened like 2 months ago.
I don't really see it. They beat Duke once upon a time, but, you know.
That was a while. That was 2 months ago.
Yep. All right. And then moving in the South, speak of the Blue Devil. Here's a region that I am not going to be very objective about. I'm just going to put that out there. Duke, Gonzaga, top 2 seeds. These are the weakest 1 and 2 seeds in the tournament, I think.
You think?
You got to challenge me on there, Jim?
I think.
Because here's the thing. Duke?
Well, these two, okay, the Midwest and the West are the strongest two.
Absolutely.
And this is more Midwest is by virtue of Kentucky. These two, Wisconsin, Arizona.
Wisconsin, Arizona are like, the three best teams in the tournament are on the left side, I'm going to say.
But I don't know. Villanova, Virginia.
Okay, here, let me make my case for Duke not being that good.
Okay.
We have seen in the last 3 years that they can lose early and it can be hilarious. Jahlil Okafor is the best low post scorer in the country. He is not the best low post defender in the country. No, he is not near there. And you know what? This Duke team is talented beyond all comprehension, unless you're looking at Kentucky, in which case it's very easy to comprehend. But I just don't really see it with, like, they should not, like, let's just first of all say how it's total BS. They're the number 3 seed, overall seed in the tournament. They do not deserve it more than Wisconsin. They do not deserve it more than Arizona. This team did not win the ACC regular season or the ACC tournament. They lost to Miami, who right now is projected to lose in the first round of the NIT. And we're supposed to believe that these guys are the number 3 team in the country because they beat Virginia and Wisconsin once.
Like, this is quite the rant.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna I should also disclaim that you're gonna say, oh yeah, but they beat Wisconsin, Virginia. I'm of the opinion that a head-to-head battle is awesome. It is not the all-encompassing objective. One team is better than the other. Some teams have good nights, some teams have bad nights. Tyus Jones had a dream night. And you know what?
Wisconsin's lost back in December. Now you're talking about Miami's loss. Now wait a second, because Wisconsin
they lost by double digits at home to Miami.
Okay, but Wisconsin lost to Rutgers
without Kaminsky.
But they lost to Rutgers.
Yes, no, crazy shit can happen, but that's hey. I think.
But they lost to Miami.
Yes. But yeah, you know what? Maybe we should move on because I could go for another half hour. You're
really worked up.
This is how we do an hour-long podcast. Okay, just Gonzaga. Ask me to dislike Duke.
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga, I kind of like. You know, I feel like this is overall a strong group of ones and two seeds as opposed to, you know, the previous years. I feel like there's a very good, solid top eight. And Gonzaga, you know, they have some really good players. But in the end, they're a huge variable because, once again, this is true for Gonzaga and Wichita State last year and a ton of other teams before them. We just haven't seen them play anyone. They played Arizona and probably, actually, Gonzaga. Yeah, no, Gonzaga's strongest performance of the season could arguably be the loss to Arizona because they took Arizona to overtime in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. And plus, you know, Gonzaga has a dynamic duo, really, with Kevin Pangos in their backcourt and Kyle Wilcher, former Kentucky player, you know, in their frontcourt. And either of those guys can really, could really help take over this team. But I don't know. I'm with you there with the, you know, who do they play?
Yeah. Well, I do see one team in their region, who could give them a run for their money in the Sweet 16. I believe Bobby had them as their dark horse if Bobby wants to go into this, because Bobby was our South Region analyst.
Are we talking about SMU here?
We are talking about SMU.
Yeah, I think SMU is a little bit under the radar. I realize they played in the American, which isn't exactly a great conference, but in the tournament they had to beat Temple, who should be in the tournament, and then they had to beat UConn, who the defending national champions were playing for their right to win the tournament.
I'm not sure if I agree with your Temple should be in the tournament. UCLA really earned it this year.
Yeah, 2013 team that played in arguably the worst Power 5 conference. I don't know, Jeff.
Dude, that is a tournament team if I have ever heard one. They should be ranked ahead of Duke, man.
But I like SMU. They really had to battle through that conference tournament to get there, beating UConn, who really wanted to get in the tournament, was definitely no easy task. And teams that do well in the conference tournament, generally that carries over well into the NCAA tourney.
Plus, they've got a decent coach from what I've heard.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Mr. Larry Brown, you know what? You can say Larry Brown has no loyalty to his teams. You can't say he's a bad coach because the dude's an amazing coach.
He is.
Only coach to ever win NBA title and NCAA title. Yes.
Yeah, and you're telling me I can buy that guy at a six seed? Like, we're doing a Cardinal bracket pool. I might have SMU in the Final Four. I love them that much. They're a big team. I think Duke is an upset prone, and I think it decides to take down Gonzaga if they're playing well.
I also like Georgetown coming out of that four seed. Again, didn't really play a whole lot of good teams, but all the way back in November, they looked good against Wisconsin. Josh Smith is a force down low. I mean, that guy can really bang down low. And
he's massive.
Smith, yes, linebacker status.
However,
I mean, nose tackle.
Yes.
However, Gonzaga is a pretty big dude too at center.
They do, but
God help you if you can pronounce his name. But the dude's like 7'2" and 300 pounds.
I think Smith Rivera is kind of an X factor for Gonzaga.
Oh, absolutely.
I think him and Pangos are. Georgetown. Sorry, Smith Rivera for Georgetown. I think him and Pangos are pretty similar, but I think Smith Rivera is a better scorer overall.
Oh, the Smith Rivera that's played against Wisconsin shows up. This is a Final Four.
Yes, can really take over a game. Could really take over this region if he wanted to. So.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna move now to the West, to sunny Los Angeles. We got Wisconsin and Arizona as the top two seeds. I'm just gonna say it. I think these two teams are two of the three best teams in the tournament for, like, how to expect them to do in the tournament.
Wisconsin and Arizona, like, they're on a steamroll towards the Elite Eight. The only matchup that, you know, okay, as a, you know, as a Wisconsin student, you always like, Wisconsin could lose to anybody, you know. But
yeah.
The only matchup that I really see as troubling for either of these two teams is whoever comes out of this VCU-Ohio State game and plays Arizona. That could get dicey because... Yeah. You know, VCU's got Shaka Smart, really good team. Probably
you
a little under.
You could say they create havoc on defense.
You could say that. You could say that.
Someone should use that as a name.
I don't know if it'll catch on.
Yeah.
The
or
VCU,
be, or
like,
be used as faux analysis by every person who watches college basketball.
Yeah. I think they're kind of underseeded. And
well, they did lose Briante Weber. Actually has an argument as the best ball stealer in the history of college basketball.
Kind of an odd label. Ball stealer.
Ball thief.
Ohio State has D'Angelo Russell, and their team is, holistically speaking, they're not as good as VCU.
Yeah. However,
but
I feel
Ohio
like
State's got D'Angelo Russell.
But I'm going to say that we might want to avoid star syndrome with D'Angelo Russell because, you know, he's probably going to go in the top five of the draft, maybe the top three. But there's a reason Ohio State's a 10 seed and not a 4 seed right now.
Oh, I think...
And it's called the rest of the team.
I think VCU beats Ohio State.
Yeah.
But if Ohio State did knock off VCU, I think they could give Arizona a pretty, you know, dicey game.
Yeah. And one more team I'm going to point out, just because I feel like we have to, North Carolina. I've watched this team a lot this year, and... Here I'm going to say two things. One, if I can buy a 4 seed to lose in the first two rounds, it's UNC by a wide margin.
Louisville,
Maryland, and Georgetown. I will take those teams over UNC to make the Sweet 16.
Okay.
If they make the Sweet
Louisville,
16,
arguably.
If they meet Wisconsin in the Sweet 16, with UNC, if you watch the Duke game or the first Duke game where they choked away a 10-point lead in like 3 minutes. That happened because of free throws. UNC is a beyond awful free throw team. What does Wisconsin do better than anyone in the country? Not allow free throw attempts. So that's UNC losing pretty much their biggest weakness going out the window, and them showing up like this is like these players signed up for UNC, and you're going to make them an underdog. I think they could give Wisconsin trouble. I think Wisconsin is such a better team than them. But it's worth noting that a team losing its biggest weakness and a team as talented as North Carolina should not make people pack for Indianapolis yet.
Yeah. Oh, nobody's packing for Indianapolis.
Yeah, not with Arizona as their 2 seed. Arizona is very, very good. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that's all the time we have for today. I hope you enjoyed my rants. I hope you enjoyed our brain farts.
You can check out all of our NCAA tournament coverage online.
And the March Madness issue.
And, yes, if you're in Madison, pick up one of these Daily Cardinal issues. They're on stands all week. Tons of great content. Very nice, pretty bracket here that you can
such
fill out
a pretty bracket.
And keep tabs on.
Honestly, buy this bracket. Don't even mark it up. Don't desecrate it. Just throw it up on your wall. It's that much of an art piece.
Frame it.
Yes.
First. Laminate it. Frame it.
Yes.
Get it autographed by Cameron Graff.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we should have a session for him like in the next couple days.
Yeah.
We'll keep you posted on that.
But with that, I'm Jim.
I'm Jack.
And we're signing off.